Well, as was mentioned in the sermonette briefly, the Winter Family Weekend theme last year was redeeming the time. I don't know about you, but I found a lot to think about from that theme while we were there and in the time since then. In the messages, there were so many examples and reminders of how our time is being stolen away without us even noticing it in the moment, it seems like. As they say, hindsight is 20/20. We can look back after we've already kind of wasted some time and we can see, okay, yes, I recognize where that was kind of frivolous, where that time was lost. The challenge we have, though, is going forward with clarity so that we don't find ourselves saying that same thing over and over again. Ah, I did it again. Ah, there went that waste of time one more time. It's a challenge to recognize these distractions that can steal our focus and our energy in the moment. That requires another trait that's related to walking circumspectly, walking carefully, walking wisely. Really, in order to redeem the time, there's another trait of godly character that is necessary. Before we can really redeem the time, we need discernment. Discernment, to be able to tell the difference between what is valuable and what is a waste of time. The difference between what is helpful and what is harmful in our lives. The basic difference between what is good and what is not, what is evil. The ability to discern based on godly standards is essential to being able to redeem the time. Otherwise, we just find ourselves back in this same pattern of, oh, yep, there it went. I see I wasted it again. But if we don't have the discernment to recognize in the moment what the good choice is, we're just going to keep continuing this pattern of waste and recognition, without any real progress to redeem that time in the future. Now, in contrast to godly discernment, that ability to recognize what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is evil. Our society around us is constantly pushing another message. Constantly pushing the message of moral relativism. That you decide what is good and what is evil. That there are no clear lines between what's right and what's wrong. It just depends on you and what you want and what you need. We're told in the world all around us, decide for yourself. And don't judge me if I decide differently than you do. Really, this descriptor of what our world is like today fits the exact description of ancient Israel in the time of the judges. In the final verse of the book of Judges, where it says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. That's what's happening today, too. And there's no shame in it among most of society. They know that's what they're doing, and they're pushing other people to do the same. You decide for yourself. You do you. The same verse of everyone doing what's right in his own eyes, that verse could be written about our day and age. It says, in those days there was no king in Israel. There was no solid leadership. And it led everyone to just do what they thought was right individually. The truth is, until the King of Kings reigns on this earth, everyone is going to continue doing what's right in his own eyes. And they're going to continue to feel the consequences of that. Of course, brethren, we're called out from this world to do something different. We're called to discern. Not to follow our hearts, to decide for ourselves about what is right, what is wrong. Not to do what's right in our own eyes, but we're called to discern how to live and how to spend our time, I might add, based not on our own hearts, but on God's heart. And throughout God's Word, He's revealing to us His heart. His heart and mind. What He thinks and feels and desires. What He knows is best. And we're involved in this lifelong process of training our own hearts to be able to discern and make judgments and decisions based on God's heart rather than our own. If we're going to redeem the time going forward, because the days are evil, it's critical for all of us to continually be yielding to God's definition of good and evil, continuing to develop discernment, rather than buying into the "listen to your heart" message that's propagated by Satan in society. That's going to require discernment, and honestly, it's going to require some work. Because discernment doesn't just happen overnight. The point of my message today is that developing discernment is a lifelong process of training. Developing discernment is a lifelong process of training. Some of you might remember a camp theme right along this line from back in 2019. Our camp theme back in 2019 was discernment, training your heart. And redeeming the time is hard because without a heart that's thoroughly trained in discerning God's standard of right and wrong, of useful or useless, we're not going to really want to change anything about the way we use our time. Now, please realize there are things that we need to change just in terms of our time management. If we don't have the discernment to recognize it's not just a preference, but it's a willingness to obey God, to allow Him to decide what's good and what's evil. And without that discernment to recognize what He considers right and wrong, we're not going to be motivated to really change how we use our time. We're going to say, "Yeah, I should probably work on that someday." And we're going to continue in that pattern of recognizing, "Yep, wasted some more time there. Should really work on that someday." As long as our own hearts are at the top of the list of our decision-making, the influences that guide our decision-making, as long as our heart is above God's heart on a matter, we're not really going to change. So we need discernment, and we need God to help train our hearts to be able to discern good from evil, right from wrong, based on His perception, His mind, His desires. Let's talk about discernment today and why our hearts need some training in order to develop discernment. First of all, what is discernment? In its simplest form, discernment is the ability to judge well. In the Old Testament, one of the Hebrew words that's often translated discern means to understand or consider or perceive. In the New Testament, the Greek word translated discerning is diakrisis, which means a distinguishing, a discerning, a judging. So when we talk about discernment, we're talking about the ability to understand, perceive, distinguish, differentiate between two options. The ability to differentiate between matters of right and wrong in particular. And we'll see as we go throughout this message that that is a matter of the heart. The ability to discern right and wrong involves the heart. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 3. If I were to ask you to stop and think about one biblical example of discernment, many of you would think right off the top of your head of King Solomon. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 3. We'll begin reading in verse 5. 1 Kings 3 verse 5. We read here in 1 Kings 3, verse 5, that Gibeon, the Lord, appeared to Solomon in a dream by night. And God said, "Ask, what shall I give you?" Now, can you just stop for a minute and put yourself in Solomon's shoes? If that happened to you tonight, if suddenly you heard a voice, and one way or another in your own mind you knew, this is God talking to me, and He asks you, "Hey, what do you want?" It's not the three wishes from a genie kind of scenario. He's asking, you know, "Tell me one thing. What would you like?" What would be your answer? What is it in your life right now that you desire so much that if God gave you the opportunity to ask for anything, what would you ask for? Would it be discernment? We'll continue here in verse 6. And Solomon said, "You have shown great mercy to your servant, David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you've given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, Lord, my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David, but I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people, whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" You know, we might often say, what did Solomon ask God for? He asked for discernment. Well, actually, he asked for a change of heart. He asked for an understanding heart that he might be able to discern. The heart is involved in this whole process of being able to discern between good and evil. We need God to change our hearts, to discern and see things how he does, to agree with him about what's right and what's wrong, what's good for us and what's not. Verse 10 says, "The speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. Then God said to him, 'Because you have asked this thing and have not asked long life for yourself, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, behold, I've done according to your word. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any like you arise after you.'" Now, it's interesting that Solomon asked for an understanding heart for the purpose of judging and discerning between good and evil, of all the things he could ask for. There are other character traits that might come to mind. There might be a particular trait of character that you struggle with and you really want to develop it, and that might be what you asked for. But Solomon asked for an understanding heart to be able to discern properly. He recognized that something about his own heart would need to change in order for discernment to be present in his life. And we know he wasn't talking about the organ in his chest. When he asked for an understanding heart, he was talking about his way of thinking, of understanding and feeling, his way of viewing life. He knew he would need help beyond his natural perspective and opinion in order to properly discern between good and evil, especially when all these people were going to be asking him to do so. He was going to be giving opinions, judgments about things in his role as king. And he recognized, I'm not capable of that on my own. If it's left up to me and my heart, it's not going to go well. God answered his prayer. He gave him this understanding heart, this help and ability to discern. And it seems like, the way I read the story, this is something that God just gave Solomon, like that. But that's not really how it works for the rest of us. Have you ever woken up one day and then all of a sudden realized you have perfect discernment? You agree with God about everything? You know what's right and wrong, and your opinion is in line with God's, and you just do it. Well, that's not exactly what happened with Solomon, as we know. He had the ability to discern between good and evil, but he didn't always choose the good. Solomon acknowledged what we all have to come to recognize individually at the very beginning here, before his request. He acknowledged that it's not within us alone to choose wisely. He said, "I don't know how to go out or come in. I don't really know what's best." It's not within us and our own ability to discern between good and evil properly all the time. Mankind's been trying to do that for thousands of years now, and they're still telling us that we can. Decide for yourself, follow your heart. But where has it led? It's led to the consequences of sin that we see around us, the evil and suffering that we see around us in the world. It's led to confusion and every evil thing. All of these things are the results of man-made wisdom that doesn't have God as its source. So when we talk about the need for discernment, we're talking about the need to distinguish between right and wrong, not based on our own feelings, opinions, or preferences, but the ability to differentiate between right and wrong based on the standards of truth revealed in God's Word. The quest for discernment and the need to have our hearts trained to achieve it begins with this acknowledgement that we don't know how to go out or come in. That if left to ourselves, we're going to make some bad choices. Our own hearts are going to lead us astray. God blessed Solomon, it says, with this ability, this wisdom beyond all other human beings. Of course, the exception of Jesus Christ. Yet an understanding heart to discern is not something most of us are just given overnight. It's something that we must continually strive for and grow in. Our hearts have to be trained to see life and see the world the way God does. Developing discernment has to begin, of course, with this recognition that we need His help. It begins with recognition of verses like Jeremiah 10, verse 23. Let's go back there, Jeremiah 10, verse 23. It's interesting that so many of God's servants in Scripture agreed with statements like this in Jeremiah 10, verse 23. Verse 23 says, O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. How many leaders in the world have you ever heard say that? As part of their bid for a nomination, for a leadership position, for an office, how many people have you ever heard say, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing. It's not in man, it's not in me to know how to direct my steps. So if you elect me to this office, I'm going to ask God for His direction. Yeah, we haven't heard that, have we? Yet that's the foundation of beginning to train our hearts toward discernment. Acknowledging that we need God's lead. We need Him to change and shape our hearts. We need Him to train us on how to distinguish between right and wrong, between what's a waste and what is valuable. Jeremiah goes on in verse 24 and says, O Lord, correct me, but with justice. Not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. This is a wise example to follow here. When we ask God to change our hearts, when we ask Him to correct the things that are wrong about our view on the world, our own opinions about life, about choices, about how we use our time. We ask Him to correct us, but we add this disclaimer like Jeremiah did. But with justice, and please, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. We ask for God to train our hearts, but we ask Him to use mercy in doing so. We can't do it on our own. We can't develop discernment without God's help. Mankind, again, thinks they can. They think they can figure it all out all on their own. And nobody stands up and says, elect me, I don't know what I'm doing. Instead, they say, I've got all the answers. If you just give me the opportunity to decide everything, the world will be so much better. When January 20th comes along, you just wait and see, man. That's what everybody says. It never happens that way. Mankind, apart from the Spirit of God, they think they know the perfect way. They think they have all the answers. Simply not true. And if we're going to develop discernment, godly discernment, we have to start with that foundation of realizing we don't know what we're doing. And we need God to train our hearts. Because our hearts left to themselves want to make judgments on their own. And yet, we know Jeremiah 17, verse 9. You can turn over there and read it with me if it doesn't come to mind automatically here. In Jeremiah 17, verse 9, you'll be familiar with the words. It says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? See, our hearts are really good at deceiving us into thinking we're right. That our view, our opinion is right. But part of developing discernment is realizing that's not actually true, that our hearts are deceitful, and we need God to train our hearts and bring them into line with His view, His perspective on what's good and what's evil. Our own hearts can't be the source of wise judgments. The human heart is inherently selfish and self-willed, and it must be trained. Tamed. Isn't it ironic and kind of sad that the message again passed on in the world is just follow your heart, when God says the complete opposite? You can't trust your own heart. Following your untrained heart is the wisdom of this world. It's not the wisdom that comes from above. So godly discernment is our goal, but it requires training our hearts, bringing our hearts, our opinions, our views in line with that of God Himself. Our hearts have to be trained because of what Proverbs 14, verse 12 says. Proverbs 14, verse 12. It says, there's a way that seems right to a man. Oh, it's convincing. We'll be assured in our own mind that this is the right thing to do. This is good for me. This is going to bring the results I want. This is going to make me happy. Yet the second half of the proverb is, but its end is the way of death. There's a way that seems right to man, but its end is the way of death. What we feel like might be a good choice isn't always a good choice in reality. Not in the long term when we see all the consequences play out of the decisions we make. No matter how convincing our hearts may be in the moment. Over in James chapter 3, we'll begin reading in verse 13. James 3, verse 13. I mentioned that man-made earthly wisdom. And James here describes that in contrast to the wisdom from above. Wisdom of which God is the source. James chapter 3, we'll begin in verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. Again, there's this concept of meekness involved here. Realizing and having a humble perspective on our own ability. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. Now, isn't the whole message of follow your own heart, you do you, isn't that whole message a message of self-seeking? God says confusion and every evil thing are the result of that approach. But, verse 17, the wisdom that is from above, wisdom of which God is the source, is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. A great passage to do a word study on here, to look at all these different attributes of godly wisdom. Training our hearts to develop discernment requires humility, that meekness of wisdom, because there is this self-seeking that's a part of our own human hearts, our own human man-made forms of wisdom. And if we're ever going to develop and maintain the ability to make wise judgments in God's sight, we have to be willing to yield our feelings and opinions to God's standards. And that takes trust. Trust in Him and His wisdom over trusting our own emotions, our own opinions. This wisdom is first described as first pure. The word pure means clean, free from carnality, chaste, modest. But it also has the meaning of being free from any added mixture, not diluted. And when I think about how that definition applies to this wisdom from above, the wisdom from above is not diluted. It has no added mixture. It's pure. I think about the temptation we have in life often to mix truth and opinion. To mix our own opinion in with some truth and then make a decision that we think is wise. But God tells us here in His inspired word that the wisdom from above is first pure, no added mixture of truth and opinion. Our opinion is secondary to God's truth. And if it's in contradiction to God's truth, our opinion simply has to be brought into subjection if we're to develop discernment. We must first be submissive to the pure wisdom of God as He reveals through His word, without trying to add to it with our own thoughts, our own perspectives. Just one of the other descriptors here I'll highlight, and that's willing to yield. That ties in hand with this concept of not mixing truth and opinion. Are we willing to yield to God's wisdom, to His definition of what He says is right and wrong, what is good and evil, if our opinion contradicts with His? If we're developing godly wisdom, true discernment, we will be willing to yield our opinions to the truth of God and trust Him to know better than we do. Go to Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5. Proverbs 3, verse 5. Now, that's hard to do. To yield our own opinions to the truth of God, because our opinions are strong. Our perspectives, our views are strong. We want to hold on to them. But Proverbs 3, beginning in verse 5, it tells us, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding." Part of training our heart is learning to do this. Learning to not just lean on our own perspective. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. So there's this contrast here between being wise in our own eyes and trusting the lead of our loving God. And that takes training our hearts to build that trust, to follow His lead instead of our own. It's not natural. Over in Isaiah 5, we'll read one more passage here, tied to this whole concept of discernment. Isaiah chapter 5, verses 20 and 21. Isaiah 5, verse 20. It says, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." Now God says, woe to these people who would decide for themselves, who allow the dictates of their own heart to decide what's good, what's right, what's dark, what's light. And they stand in opposition to Him. And verse 21 says, "Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight." So Isaiah warns of the importance of being able to determine good from evil. And he ties this ability in with the concept of not being wise in your own eyes. Following the wisdom of our own hearts leads to the same results that we've seen in the world around us from generation to generation. It doesn't lead to the prophesied future we look forward to of the effects of righteousness being quietness and assurance forever. Allowing the wisdom of our own eyes to lead us leads to this same old of chaos, confusion, and every evil thing. The results of man-made wisdom. So like Solomon, we do need discernment. But unlike Solomon, this isn't something we're just suddenly endowed with at one point in time. Rather, we have to go through this lifelong process of our hearts being trained to discern things as God does. So how can we engage in that process? How can we grow in discernment so that we'll even see a desire to redeem the time that we have left in this life to do things differently than we have in the past, maybe in a new light? I have three simple steps here regarding training our hearts to discern. The three steps are train, gain, maintain. How many of you have ever trained for a race? I'll take a show of hands. Any kind of race. It could be like, you know, you trained to race your brother around the block when you were young. It could be a 5K. It could be a half marathon. If you're really crazy, it could be a full marathon. I know some of you have. Okay. Did you wake up one day and decide, you know what? Today seems like a good day to die. I'm gonna run 26.2 miles. Why not? Of course you didn't. Training is required to accomplish such a large goal. How much more the goal of developing godly discernment? There has to be training involved. We're not going to just get to that goal miraculously. Unless your middle name happens to be Solomon, it's going to take some training. In the same way that we have to train physically to accomplish a big goal, like a big race, we have to train if we're going to reach our goal of developing godly discernment, of being able to distinguish between right and wrong and agree with God about His standards of what's good for us and what's not. We train our hearts by asking God to help us see and agree with His heart on what's right and wrong. Let's go to Psalm 119. Psalm 119, just like Solomon asked for an understanding heart, we need to ask as well. That's part of our training of our hearts. Ask God to give us an understanding heart so that we can discern between good and evil. We see an example of this here in Psalm 119. In this section here, we'll begin in verse 33. The psalmist says, "Teach me, O Lord, the way of your statutes, and I shall keep it to the end. Give me understanding, and I shall keep your law." That word understanding, it's the same Hebrew word, beam, that's often translated discern in the Old Testament. Give me discernment, and I shall keep your law. Help me to see things the way you do, and then I'll do it. Indeed, I shall observe it with my whole heart. Make me walk in the path of your commandments, for I delight in it. Incline my heart to your testimonies and not to covetousness. Turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things and revive me in your way. It's interesting, these last two verses here, verses 36 and 37, the psalmist acknowledges the fact that sometimes he doesn't agree with God's opinion about things. And he realizes it needs to be brought in line with God's standards. Incline my heart to your testimonies. Bring me into agreement with you on what's good for me and what's not. Turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things. That's definitely a connection with redeeming the time. Only we heard about that brain rot. I crave that brain rot a lot. Need to pray for God to turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things, incline my heart to His way of doing things. We ask God for discernment. That's where we start with training our hearts to develop it. But we also, of course, have to search His Word for the answers. We search God's Word for His heart, for His mind, His perspective on what He defines as good. We meditate on His law. We put it in our hearts and minds so it's ready to draw upon when we need it. And we face different situations throughout the day. And in the process of doing this, asking God for discernment and looking for it, we're training our hearts to properly discern. Prayer and Bible study. There's no way around the basics of training to develop discernment. Just like there's no way around training for a big race. Signing up for the event won't get you ready. Making a detailed training plan of which days you're going to go out and run, even when you don't feel like it, it's not going to get you ready if you don't actually do it. Having the pretty calendar there is not going to do anything. Right? We have to put the time in to train. Ask God for discernment. Look for His answers. Implant His heart and mind into our own. Have His law written on our hearts. As daily we're seeking to understand more about how He sees things and how He wants us to do things. So that finally we start to see things as worthless that are worthless. And finally we start to agree with Him about the stuff we need to change in our lives instead of fighting against it and wanting to go our own way and follow our own opinion instead. Training is necessary. Prayer, Bible study, meditation, that's our basic training. But that's only the first step. As we train, we also have to gain. Now, to accomplish any goal, like training for a race, in the process of training, we have to gain some muscle. We have to gain some endurance. Interestingly, the Bible tells us that we gain more spiritual strength to discern, to be able to discern between right and wrong, the more we do what God says is right. So it's not just training in terms of we pray, we study the Bible, but part of training our hearts and developing discernment is then we put into practice what God reveals to us. Notice Hebrews chapter 5. Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 12. Hebrews 5 and verse 12, jumping in here to a pretty strong section talking to the brethren about them becoming dull of hearing. In verse 12 it says, "For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracles of God. You've come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he's a babe. But solid food belongs to those who are of full age. That is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil." Every time we're faced with a choice between doing what God says is right and what we feel we should do instead, we have a chance to gain spiritual muscle. We have a chance to put into practice, have our senses exercised to discern both good and evil by putting into practice what God shows us is the right way. The more we choose to do the right that He has revealed to us, the stronger our ability to discern will be in the future. It's by reason of use that this ability to discern is exercised, strengthened, that we make gains in this area of discernment. We can pray, we can study, we can learn all about the technicalities of God's law and what He says is right and wrong. But if we don't put it into practice, we won't develop discernment. All we'll develop is head knowledge. James chapter 1 speaks to this important concept of not just being hearers, but putting into practice what we learn. James chapter 1, verse 22. James 1, verse 22, "But be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves." See, there's that self-deception again. "If anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it, and is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this one will be blessed in what he does." You're going to gain some spiritual muscle by being a doer of the word. It's not enough to just know what God expects of us. researching and developing a training plan is not enough. We wouldn't expect to complete a marathon just by researching the biomechanics of proper running form, without going out and doing any actual running, without going out and putting in the time to train and make gains in our abilities. Our best laid training plans won't lead to the accomplishment of the goal. The same is true with discernment. Discernment's not only the ability to differentiate between right and wrong. It's differentiating between right and wrong as God defines it and choosing the right. And can we say we have godly discernment if we don't have that second step, putting into practice what we learn? Not really. But as we put into practice what God shows us is His view of what should be done in our lives, our ability to discern is strengthened. All right, another show of hands. How many of you go to a restaurant and struggle to decide if you should order the shrimp Alfredo or the chicken Parmesan? Anybody? Anybody? How many of you sit at home on Friday night and agonize over whether you should go to church on Saturday or Sunday this week? By reason of use, exercising spiritual discernment to know and do what's right, there are some aspects of life that have become pretty easy to discern, right? Because you've done it for so long. But if you're a first-generation Christian called into the church, those were tough things to discern at first. Now they're pretty easy to discern because of reason of use. You've acted on what God has shown you, and as a result, your discernment has been strengthened. You've gained spiritual muscle. Discernment isn't always that easy, is it? I like this quote. It's attributed to Charles Spurgeon, a Baptist preacher. He's quoted as saying, "Discernment is not a matter of simply telling the difference between right and wrong. Rather, it is telling the difference between right and almost right." And that's when it's tough to discern. Satan knows how to market sin as almost right. He knows how to wrap up false ideas in packages that seem appealing and how to slowly lead us away from the truth. But the more we have our senses exercised to discern good and evil by practicing what God says is good, the easier it will be for us to recognize those subtle differences between what's right and what's almost right. The easier it will be to differentiate between right and wrong, between good and evil. So we train through prayer, through Bible study, through learning God's perspective on what He wants us to do with our lives. We gain the ability to discern by putting those things into practice, by acting on what He says is right instead of following our own opinion and desires. And again, I'm acknowledging that's hard. When we sin, is it not because we decided to do what we wanted instead of what God says? Pretty much. We let our hearts rule in that moment instead of following the dictates of God's heart. And we all struggle with that. So we must train and we must gain by putting into practice. And maybe that'll help us make the right choice by just this little reminder that the more we choose what is right, the more our own opinion is going to be brought in line with God's. If we want to agree with God about what's good for us, about how we live our lives, take action. Do what He says is right, even when we don't really want to. And that ability to discern will get sharper. But then we need to maintain. Train, gain, maintain. Again, how many of you have ever done a race before? A long distance race? Okay, no one wants to raise their hands anymore. They don't trust me. How many of you can still run that race? I think the longest I've run in, I don't know, too many years to mention, maybe 2 or 3 miles, definitely not the 13.1 I used to be able to run. I probably can't even keep up with half of the teams in this room anymore. 38 today, so I might pull a muscle just, you know, trying. So. This is an important step, maintain. Just as exercise exercising what we know God says is right makes discernment easier. Compromise diminishes our ability to discern. The more we compromise with what we know is right, the harder it is to distinguish between what's right and what's almost right. The training of our hearts to discern has to be maintained. If we let up on that training of our hearts through compromise, through a lack of time in God's Word, maybe, through a lack of gaining spiritual muscle by doing what we know is right, things that once were pretty easy become difficult again. How many people do you know who used to see God's standards of right and wrong very clearly, but for whom now the lines seem really blurred? The human heart loves compromise because it's an excuse to do what we want without guilt, right? We can convince ourselves that a lot of things are okay if we take this kind of slow-faded approach to compromise, just giving it a little bit here and there. Well, it's only the last part of the last quarter of the game that's actually going to be on the Sabbath. What about when the next game would require the whole fourth quarter to be on the Sabbath? And the game after that, maybe the second half. And the game after that, well, it's in the afternoon and we have morning services, so what's the big deal? See, compromise can affect our ability to discern. Or, I know the behavior in this show is ungodly, but I'm old enough to realize that these things are wrong and I would never do them myself. It's just the storyline is so captivating, so I can watch it and I cannot be affected by it. Does that affect our ability to discern between good and evil? And the examples may be different for all of us. Letting quality time with God slowly fall by the wayside. Maybe at first compromise just because it's a busy stretch of life. Putting up with speculation that's taught as dogmatic truth because this person really has some interesting ideas about other things. So I'll put up with this teaching. I know it's wrong because I want to hear what else they have to say. Maybe cutting corners at work, thinking it's not a big deal because I've gone above and beyond so many other times and, you know, the company kind of owes me. These little aspects of compromise affect our ability to discern in the future. The shift from a sharp perception of right and wrong, of what's true, what's false, becomes a clouded opinion. And it's a slow fade. It was for Solomon. Let's go back to 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 11. Actually, let's go to 1 Kings 3 first. 1 Kings chapter 3. In verse 3. We started here before in verse 5. We're going to go back to 1 Kings 3, verse 3 instead. It says, "And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David, except that he sacrificed and burned incense at the high places. Now the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar." It's that word "except" in verse 3 that gets my attention. He loved God. He walked in the statutes of his father David. He did what he was taught by his righteous father, except that he sacrificed and burned incense at the high places. And then right after this is when Solomon asked for an understanding heart to be able to discern. So I don't know, in my own human thinking, I would think, okay, he had this "except" clause, something he needed to work on in his life. And once God gave him this ability to discern, then he probably corrected that "except," right? He probably corrected those compromises in his life. Let's go to chapter 11. 1 Kings chapter 11, beginning in verse 1. Verse 1 says, "But King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites. From the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, 'You shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods.' Solomon clung to these in love. How did that start? Well, God had given this clear instruction in His Word, don't intermarry with these people, and yet Solomon clung to these in love. Was that a slow fade? A little bit of compromise here and there? Verse 3, and he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For it was so, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned his heart after other gods. And his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and did not fully follow the Lord, as did his father David. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, on the hill that is east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the people of Ammon. And he did likewise for all his foreign wives who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. So the Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned from the Lord God of Israel, who appeared to him twice and had commanded him concerning this thing that he should not go after other gods. But he did not keep what the Lord had commanded. He did not maintain his ability to discern. He didn't put it into practice. But how do you think that might have started? I believe it was probably a slow fade. A series of decisions to compromise. Probably not just a single moment in time when he did a 180-degree turn. Did he test the waters out a bit first? I mean, God had given special instructions for kings when Israel asked for a king. And one of those special instructions was that the king should not multiply wives for himself. Solomon probably didn't think he was multiplying wives at first. He was just adding a few, right? It's not multiplication per se. It's just addition. Until eventually he, or at least we, can look back on his life and see he was involved in some serious high-level mathematics. But how did that start? I'd guess with a compromise. God had said not to intermarry with the people of the land because they would turn his heart away. And notice in verse 4, as we read, for it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart after other gods. So what does that tell us? It didn't happen right away. Could it be that that led to just a little bit more compromise? Was there some testing of the waters, some compromise in the beginning? Look, I've been married for 15 years to Monica and Erica and Rita and Tina and Sandra and Mary and Jessica. Those are all from Mambo Number 5, by the way. Some of you will recognize that song. The teens have no idea what that song is. Been married to them for like 15 years now. They haven't once tried to stop me from worshiping God. It says it wasn't until he was old that exactly what God said would happen, happened. Could it be that Solomon compromised just a little bit and it had an effect on his ability to discern? Until the point where, what was this accept clause back in chapter 3? You know, he served God with his whole heart, except, yeah, he worshipped at the high places. Now he's building high places for false gods. Because of a little bit of compromise that affected his ability to discern until he's doing exactly what God had instructed him not to do. We have to maintain our ability to discern, brethren. And that is done through the little decisions not to compromise on what God has shown us is right and wrong. If we compromise, it will affect our ability to discern. We have to maintain our hearts, guard them. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 20. Proverbs 4, verse 20. I mean, you know what areas in your life you've compromised on in the past and where it's led. You might have something in your mind right now. Something that you know you keep compromising on. it's not going to get easier to make the right choice by continuing to compromise. It's going to get more cloudy, more blurred, until you convince yourself with your own heart that this isn't such a big deal. How do I know? Because I'm a human, carnal person too. Involved in this lifelong process of training the heart to try to develop godly discernment. And even Solomon, who has given it miraculously, more wisdom than any other human being, he did not maintain it. It wasn't a guarantee that he would have that discernment forever. He compromised. If he made wrong choices, that discernment would fade. Still a very wise king, still accomplished a great deal, still had a lot of human wisdom, but it seems his ability to discern about matters of right and wrong was affected. Proverbs chapter 4, we'll begin in verse 20. This will be our last passage today. Proverbs 4, verse 20 says, "My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart." All that sounds like training. Implant in your mind my standards, the way I see things, the way I want you to come to see things too. "For they are life to those who find them, and health to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. Put away from you a deceitful mouth, and put perverse lips far from you. Let your eyelids look straight ahead, and your eyelids look right before you." Let your eyes look straight ahead. Your eyelids don't do any looking. "Let your eyes look straight ahead, and your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path of your feet, and let your ways be established. Do not turn to the right hand or the left. Remove your foot from evil. Gain. Do what I'm showing you is right, and it's for your good." In this passage, we have these descriptions of some of the things we talked about in those first two steps. Train and gain. Put in God's opinion, His heart and mind on what's right and wrong. Implant that in our own hearts and minds. And then act on it. But in the middle here, in verse 23, we read this instruction to also maintain. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. This whole passage speaks to training, gaining a discerning heart, and maintaining that heart. We have to protect it. Compromise will destroy the ability to discern properly. Our hearts have to be trained. We have to put into practice what we're learning and gain spiritual muscle as a result, and then maintain it. Instead of following Solomon's example of this slow fade of compromise, we must keep our hearts with all diligence. We have to keep our hearts in check and realize just because we think it or feel it doesn't mean it's true. It doesn't mean it's good for us. To keep our hearts in check, recognizing our need for continual training, gaining, and maintaining of godly discernment. Even though Solomon was the wisest man on the face of the earth, that wisdom and ability to discern between right and wrong was not maintained, and it was overcome by the desires of his heart. The same can happen to us if we don't continue this lifelong battle against the deceitfulness of our own hearts. It does take a lifetime of training to develop and to maintain the discernment God wants us to have. No matter what age we are, we need to train our hearts. Train our hearts in God's Word. Ask Him for discernment. We need to gain spiritual muscle by putting His Word into practice in the decisions we make. And we need to maintain the ability to discern clearly by resisting the urge to compromise. We'll undoubtedly allow our hearts to get the best of us at times. We will slip up and make choices that we regret. We'll waste our time on things and realize we need to redeem it. But when that happens, we need to get back on the training plan. So we can all ask ourselves as we go forward from here today, are there areas of my life where my heart needs a little more training? Are there areas of our lives where we may need to acknowledge our need for discernment, to cry out for it, begin training ourselves to yield to God's direction instead of our own? And he tells us to abhor evil and cling to what is good. Are there forms of evil that we kind of like? And we need God to train our hearts to view those things like he does? Are there any accept clauses in our relationship with God, where we completely, fully love and serve God, except? And are those areas where we need to ask God for more discernment? Are there any areas that we know we need to redeem the time and do things differently, but there's part of us that doesn't really want to give up that desire of the heart? If so, we need to take these things to God openly and honestly and ask him for the help to discern according to his perspective, using his heart instead of our own. Ask him to help us change the way we see things and start choosing the right even when it's hard, to help us gain that spiritual muscle that we need, that spiritual muscle that comes by reason of use, exercising the senses to discern good and evil. And we need to resist that temptation to compromise. With the power of God's Spirit, brethren, that we have available to us, and a heart yielded to God's lead in our lives, we can not only gain the wisdom needed to discern, but we can maintain it. So let's seek God's help to train, gain, and maintain a heart of understanding that we may properly discern what is worth our time and where it might need to be redeemed.